If you find that boring, please unfollow, fuck off.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Molly Glover, Nick Glover, and Tim Wick.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we've got Tony Miller back in the luxurious trailer studios. We talk about Christian privilege, the government, and a whole bunch of really great stuff.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I am your host, Molly Glover. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Tim Wick.
I am a frog.
And Nick Glover.
Not presently froggish.
Cool. And we are recording in the luxurious trailer studios and are joined by illustrious guest, Tony Miller.
Yay. Thank you. I am an atheist toad.
Yes. So we have two frogs, a toad, and I guess I'm just a squirrel. I don't know what we're doing, so I don't know what the game is here. I'm also something. I'm very tired.
My voice is tired. That was the frog.
Oh, I see. Oh, yeah. Someone did ask me, someone who works with Eric at ANA, came out and he met me for the first time and we were talking and he said, he's from France. He's like, this is a, excuse the personal question, please, but is that your real voice? He's like, yeah, that's my real voice. He's like, oh, okay. For me, I would have to smoke 100 cigarettes and drink an entire bottle of whiskeys to sound that way. And I'm like, cool. No, that's just how I was born.
I get it without damaging my body that much. Yeah. Yay, me.
Anyway, we are here at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival. We are all exhausted because it is the end of fifth weekend. Just two more to go. But we're here with Tony because we always love recording with you when we're in town, or I guess when you're in our town. And we wanted to talk about Christian privilege, revisiting.
Christian privilege. I'm a little tired. This is my 14th weekend.
Oh, wow.
Sorry.
Because you came straight from...
Colorado.
Yeah.
And before that was Arizona.
Yeah.
There's some legal cases I've been following over this last year since last we've talked about... Bible verses in schools that the Freedom From Religion Foundation has attacked. The humanist legacy has attacked to basically remove Bible verses from schools. It seems like a fairly cut and dry case. And we were talking a little bit before you guys showed up at this remarkable trailer. Is the default position in our society is Christian.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that anytime you mention the fact that you're not a Christian is seen as an assault on this privilege, very similar to white privilege.
Yeah.
Nick had a very good hand gesture to bring it up to level. Molly, you were talking about when people in privileged situations, in this case, we're going to be talking about Christians, when they lose and are starting to lose their dominance, which more and more the Pew polls are coming out, it's happening at a fairly rapid pace.
Millennials are ditching religion really fast.
And it's rightfully just, thank you very much. A lot of times it's just through apathy, but I'm cool, whatever works. But when they start losing this privilege, they feel under personal attack, and then the Christian thing of if people attack you, you're a victim, and then you're a victim for the Lord, which means you are a good Christian, and your faith is then supported because you are a victim, which is fucked up.
Well, and that's when we watched God's Not Dead and God's Not Dead 2, that was an overarching message of those movies, which was when you're being persecuted, that's when you are at your most holy. Well, and so you have to kind of find that persecution in places, otherwise you're not being your most holy.
I think it's built into, I think we've talked about this, it's built into the idea of Christianity. I mean, Jesus died on a cross. He martyred himself for our sins, which means that the highest praise you can pay to Jesus is to martyr yourself. And in today's society, there aren't a lot of opportunities for martyrdom.
Which is really funny because, Molly, what you said is they have to find reasons to be to feel martyred and persecuted. That's why you see I'm having a tough time with words today, even though I mean, because we're all
pudding.
Over. But they go out of their way to find areas, and suddenly they blow themselves up. Well, sorry, bad choice of term. They blow up. Sorry, guys. I am really struggling today with my brain. Christians go out of their way to find themselves persecuted in ways that you're looking at going, what?
Right.
Like if, for instance, these Bible verses in schools, the whole community will lose their fucking mind and they'll make death threats against the one right. little girl or the one parent who goes, hey, you know, we're Jewish.
Yeah.
We don't want that up there, or we're Jehovah's Witness, or...
Right, which is also super ironic to me.
It is, but man, if you say you're atheist in some of these small towns and even medium-sized towns,
yeah.
you get death threats, and sometimes these families have to move from their town. Mm-hmm. If that's not an example of Christian privilege, where it's so endemic to the culture, where you get death threats
yeah.
from God-loving people because you simply say, I don't believe... Mm-hmm. That's all you're saying.
Yeah.
How, if I mean, how omnipotent is your God if one person not believing in them is such a threat? And also, how weak or how fragile is your faith mm-hmm. if someone else not believing what you believe is enough to, like, shatter your worldview and make you that upset? Like, that doesn't seem like you have very strong faith to me. That sounds like you have very fragile faith.
What you're touching on, Nick, is something that Tim and I were talking about before this. Fear is what is used so heavily in Christian theology and practice.
Mm-hmm.
Tim had a very long arc to atheism. I had a very long arc to atheism 5 years ago when I first came on this. I mm-hmm. talked about how incredibly fearful it was spend 30 to 35 years to get to the point where I could say out loud and not be fearful of it in any part of me to say there is no God.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a huge fight. And that shows you how deeply entrenched. So, Nick, when you say how fragile is their faith, in a way, I don't know if fragile is the actual word, but you come across the limits of where they say, beyond this you must not go, mm-hmm. or you will be sentenced to hell.
Mm-hmm.
You will be cast out of the body politic. All of these things come into play, but it's fear-based. It's completely fear-based. And once again, that is not a rational way of underpinning your moral and ethical structures.
Well, and I think that when it comes to, there's a lot of recent events, the idea of how the president of the United States has to not just, be a Christian who maybe goes to church, but has to be overt, saying God bless America thank God for all these things. And like really being, be really loud with, let's just say his Christianity, because he'll get so rebuked by the country that even, President Big Boy, when he was, campaigning, was like, everyone around him who knew him was like, this guy isn't going to go to church. And the Christians were like, he's not a Christian. And he had to like get super pious acting and, do a lot of, very evangelical kinds of signaling to try to get those votes.
And he's got, super awful televangelists
right.
who are like advisors to the president. And that is all Pence. About. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is all about showing that he is a good enough Christian.
Which comes back to what you were saying about fear, because if someone that egotistical and that confident in their own ability to win the presidency, and because he just thinks he's the best person in the world, has that fear that if he didn't signal, if he didn't get these televangelists on his side, if he didn't have a VP like Pence to reel in the Bible thumpers, that he wouldn't win. Because that's, the fear they use isn't just within their own religion and within themselves. I mean, they use it to control, their flock or whatever, their group, but also to control the rest of us outside of it even. Because like you just said, you were afraid to speak out about being an atheist. You felt, a little worried, even just in your own head, of that retribution, and to even have the retribution of others. I just think it's really interesting how that tool is wielded.
What's so just unbelievably flabbergasting to me, and I was talking earlier, I've been voting for 40 years now. Mm-hmm. This is my 40th year of voting. I've never seen a conglomeration of clusterfuckery like we're seeing right now.
Oh, yeah.
Because, yes, everyone around Trump is using the political mm-hmm, evangelical, mm-hmm. because there's the political Christianity and real Christianity. Mm-hmm. Trump himself doesn't care. He will do anything to promote himself.
He does it in a jingoistic way.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I don't think he actually has fear about whether people perceive him as Christian and stuff, he just used it as an available means to power.
You don't think he had a fear that without using it, he would not have come to power?
I think he totally... I don't think he actually wanted the presidency. Because remember the last presidential cycle when he goes, well, I'm running for president. As soon as it got hard, he bailed out. Mm-hmm. It's to promote himself. Sure. He's only doing it literally in this case to promote himself. He just happened to win the presidency because he didn't give a shit and he used all the fear that has been mashed down over 40 years. He's an incredible opportunist. All politicians are opportunists at a point. But this guy is so inept. It's like he fucked up backwards to the presidency.
Yeah.
Everyone else around him uses him. Don't get me wrong. Pence is very smart, and he's even scarier than Trump.
Oh, yeah.
And fortunately, with the Mueller investigation, I think they're all going.
The only reason I don't find Pence scarier than Trump is because I think he's going to have a harder time than people think signing any anti-gay legislation like people are worried about. I mean, that's harder to get through than you'd think with the current protections under federal law. But more to the point, I don't worry about Pence waking up at 5 a.m, reading a tweet, getting super pissed and telling us that we're going to bomb North Korea because he got some ego thing made him realize that he needs to whip out his dick missiles and, throw them all around the world. Otherwise, people might think that he's not a man. And, it's just, I
think you won the day on that one.
Dick missiles. No one's gonna start a war with another country. Or Pence isn't going to start a war with another country because they, made fun of his tiny hands.
Right. Well, look at Vicente Fox, the Mexican president, who is just consistently making videos that mock Trump because he knows it gets to him. And you can tell that he's like, I know that you as president, you can't get in, you can't let this shit get to you. You're like, you can't. So I'm gonna say some shit
because I know. Because eventually it will get to you.
It gets to him. He can't help himself.
Here's the interesting thing about starting wars, like you were talking about. Yeah. The Pentagon has come out time and time and time again going when Trump spits out these little 5 a.m. dick missile tweets. Yeah. I love you.
Right now. Yeah, hey.
The Pentagon's like, no, that's not how this works. Or no, we're not going to change transgender policy because we haven't seen anything from you, actually.
Yeah.
A tweet is not policy.
Yeah.
No, we're not going to start a war with Korea simply because you said so.
Yeah.
The Pentagon has come out, and this is actually kind of scary because when the governing military... Then when the head of the military starts separating themselves from presidential authority, we've seen where this can go. Now, I don't think that's going to happen because there's enough, I'm going to use this term loosely, leaders in succession. So if Trump gets picked off, if Pence gets picked off, hopefully he'll take Ryan with him.
Yeah. It's really bad all for a long time.
It doesn't get better for a long time.
About 16 down and suddenly, but the generals they push back against Trump all the time because they're finally going, look, you can't do this. You're actually affecting military efficiency here.
Well, and I think more to the point, you don't get to be a 4-star general by not having a little bit of ego and not wanting your authority to be unchallenged. I mean, really, so to have someone be like, I think I know, I never served in the military at all. I didn't even try, didn't do anything. I don't watch a lot of war movies, and so I feel like I know all this shit. And to say that stuff has got to just make them crazy.
So
getting back to Christian privilege.
I'm just going to say this.
But we already talked about that once, so no, I figured we can circle around.
We can, but I think the other way that I've noticed, and we talked about this a little earlier, that I've noticed Christian privilege, we have a friend of the show, David Traylor, who posted something in the wake of Hurricane Irma that was basically, it's an ancient philosophical argument. The idea of, there are really three possibilities in the wake of Hurricane Irma. One, you have a God that creates these disastrous events. Two, you have a God that doesn't create them but can't do anything to stop them.
Mm-hmm.
Or three, there is no God. And it's a philosophical argument that's been going on since the Greeks. But what was really fascinating to watch was the number of people who just jumped on him for stating his belief.
Yeah.
As an atheist. Whereas if a Christian basically posted a picture of a house that was not destroyed in the midst of complete devastation and said, look at the grace of God.
People would be like,
oh, that's wonderful. That's amazing. And nobody would challenge Nobody challenges that Christian worldview. Whereas the minute an atheist comes out and says, I don't believe in God, that worldview gets challenged. And that that is Christian privilege, the ability to say, I'm a Christian and I believe in God, and not have anybody say, it's not okay for you to say that. Whereas if you say, I'm an atheist, or frankly, if you said, I'm a Muslim, or anything but Christian, you are running the risk of having that belief challenged.
This is how harmful Christian privilege can get. I was literally reading, I'm using the term literally a lot today, but I'm trying to make it accurate. An article this morning in Houston, there is a church who is asking for volunteers to help for Harvey from the Harvey aftermath. And this woman, 54 years old, took a week off from work, gave $500 of her own money, generated three carloads of supplies and food from her neighbors to drop off and work a week. She took her, a week off from work. And when the pastor found out she was Jewish, asked her not to come back.
Huh. Oh, wow.
She posted this on Facebook. The pastor, Mr. Harvey, got pushback from it. So he goes, well, you're welcome to come back. She showed up and he took her aside and says, it's come to our attention that you're a lesbian and you've been in a partnership, so we don't want you coming back.
Oh my God.
When Christians feel privileged enough that they turn away people who want to volunteer to help
who are doing it, not just lip service.
And who literally don't give a fuck about the fact that they're not Christian and they're volunteering through a church. They're just like, I want to help, and this is how I can help.
Exactly.
They're trying to do the Christian thing.
The irony. Oh, the irony.
I will say back to what David posted, and my only thing with that is that there's actually one other option that isn't listed in his list of things, which is there is a God, but he did not create the disasters, nor could he do anything to stop them. He is powerless to stop them. And that's more the Epicurus thing. I think that that's an interesting, that's something that I think really terrifies a lot of theists in general, any religion, is the idea that is they have to tell themselves that there's a plan. And this isn't just limited to Christianity. This is pretty much, I think, all the big three Abrahamic religions. Like, you have to tell yourself that there's a plan. You have to tell yourself that the plan is unknowable. And you have to tell yourself that the plan generally means good things for you and for everyone around you. Because otherwise, you look at something like three hurricanes hitting the Gulf, within a week of each other, and you ask yourself, well, either God made the hurricanes, God didn't stop the hurricanes, or God couldn't stop the hurricanes. And the third one is actually more terrifying, because it means that this thing that you've given your life up to that's supposed to be all powerful isn't. And the idea that's we've had, friend of the Mark Lazarchik, when he was on one of the way, when he lost his faith was when his daughter got cancer. And the idea that you would give a child cancer or not take it away, and that this is something, if there's a world where there's a God, there can't be a God. If kids get cancer, there can't be a God, because what God would do that? And if there is, then I don't want to serve him, kind of an idea. And
well, you're touching a little bit on the deist approach, which is the watchmaker. Mm-hmm. He starts everything, and
fucking watchmaker.
But you also but then you touched on the problem with it, is if you worship a being that is not involved,
why worship?
It's really interesting.
I pay taxes to France.
At the end of every day for an hour, and I'm going to plug myself shamelessly here. You like that. I turn into the question man. It's like I just sit on a rock outside Domba, and it's like, ask me any question and I'll tell you the answer. I had an 8.5-year-old girl yesterday who gives me such great hope, because she came up to me and said, how old is the world?
Oh.
I said, well, it's about 4.5 billion years. And then her mom comes down and she goes, well, ask what you always do. And the girl went, how do you verify that? This is nice. So I talked a little bit about particle decay in an 8.5-year-old term. And then she goes, ask the question that always gives us anxiety because we're Christians. I went, okay.
The mom said this? The mom's kind of leading her a little bit?
A little bit, but her name is Lydia, who, by the way, I have hope for the future. Sure. Lydia goes, how do we know all of this is real? And so I talked about, 8.5 years old, we start with the evidence of our senses. Taste, touch, sight, sound, smell. I said, that's where we start things from. And when she gets older, she'll have more adult concepts mm-hmm. and thoughts to think about. But for right now, basically it all boils down to what we know is real is that which we can sense.
Mm-hmm.
And the mom says, well, you know, we are Christian, and I'm an energy worker, which, okay, fine.
Oh, good.
And Lydia is an indigo child, which, fuck.
What the fuck does that mean?
Oh, are you not familiar with that?
I don't. I've heard it said.
Oh, my God.
I've heard it said, but I don't know what it means.
This has been going around for a while. The indigo child, they're magical. They're possibly the next step of evolution. Basically, and they're primarily females, they're smart, very intelligent, imaginative girls. And they're special, and we need to let them find their own. It's just this. It's the next step of woo.
That was autism for me. That ended up being autism. When we got there further, it was like, it's weird. She can read at 2.5, and she's hyperverbal and so smart, and she has conversations with adults and a weird level of wit. Yeah, it's autism.
And the new age.
Yeah.
Cloaks that shit and calls it indigo child.
Indigo child. I didn't realize that was an indigo.
Which pisses me off.
Am I an indigo woman then? Did I stay indigo, or do I lose that when I get my first period?
I don't know if
it's
mature into women, but yeah, you would.
Does monarchy shed my indigo out of my womb?
It pisses me off. We were talking about anti-intellectualism earlier, the idea of an indigo child, especially if it's mostly associated with young women, is that this is unusual and special.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's the
it's
final little
It's unusual to be
there,
smart.
Yeah,
right.
She can't just be intelligent on her own merits. It has to be some mystical force at work.
Yeah.
That's kind of fucked up, too, right?
So
like
when I was... Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
No, a girl can only be intelligent or bright or remarkable if there's some external force at work.
Yes, and there's so much wrong with the indigo child bullshit. But I told Lydia, I said... Well, I'm going to smack
Lindigo.
All of you. Now you wake up.
Yeah,
thank you,
yeah,
Molly.
Yeah, it's here.
I told Lydia, I said, it's women like you, it's young girls like you that give us hope for the future. I said, you have such a wonderful brain.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, I am the best in mathematics. I was like, please keep doing that. And the girls, well, you know, God has given us our purpose and stuff. But I said, please keep thinking of evidence. You know, plant that skepticism thing, which is keep seeking out evidence. And that's what pushes it back against privilege of all kinds.
Yeah.
It's just, show me evidence.
Yeah.
And we were talking, to change your worldview is very difficult. It takes a lot of work.
Yeah.
But it's really needed these days.
I was really worried that the question she was going to ask you, the follow-up question, rather than... how do we know this is real was going to be, were you there? Which I hate, you know, like, is there, that's the, yeah, were you there? Were you there?
And I love the idea that the mom's like, we always ask this question because we're Christians. And that is the programming that Christians are somehow persecuted, and the fact that she has to state that we're Christians and that we always ask this, almost apologetically, but really it's grabbing power.
To be fair, at a Renaissance festival might be one of the few places where you might feel a little weird about your Christianity, because there's so much rampant paganism going on
and licentiousness
all over the place. Yeah. And I have a feeling that most Christians probably assume that everybody who works out here is a pagan. Of some kind, of some flavor.
They probably assume that most people are Christians and that there's just pagans exist.
You think so? You don't think that they think we're all just a bunch of pagan hippies?
Because but not necessarily pagan.
It was my mom always blamed my getting into paganism on how much I loved the Renaissance festival. So I was like, I always knew you were going to end up with this shit. Like I just knew to get to that Renaissance festival, and you're always so obsessed with the crystals and all the, you know, the little silver symbology things and like the numerology and all that stuff. And I was super fast. I've always been fascinated with that stuff because it's just weird pattern recognition things. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, anytime someone tells me that there's things you can do and then magic happens, I was into it. Like I wanted to go not eat for Lent because I thought I'd have Jesus's powers if I didn't eat for Lent. And I wanted to, like, I did all this. I got into paganism because I wanted to do all the spells.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do these work? The book says they work. Like, let's try. And, like, oh, they're not working. Maybe it's not real.
Evidence. Evidence.
Yeah.
That's the worst.
We have 5 questions.
We do.
We have 5 questions for you, too, because you haven't answered our 5 questions
yet. We have a new set.
Oh,
yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
It's very exciting.
Yeah.
And this is news to you, so this will be fun.
Cool.
All right,
I love going on the fly.
Warmed up.
Okay.
All right. Tim, question 1.
Question number 1. What conspiracy theory do you find the most interesting or compelling, not necessarily real?
No.
Obviously.
Oh, the most interesting or compelling?
Mm-hmm.
That's tough, because I'm surrounded in a community with all sorts of...
Yes.
They believe... Well, there's people who believe everything. The thing I find the most intriguing... is this ongoing burgeoning flat earth movement.
I know.
It's getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah, because the echo chamber of the internet definitely compels the powers of Christ. But it's the Christians for Flat Earth. Now, what's funny, it's an actual group. I know someone who is a Christian for Flat Earther. Now, ideally, though, they're actually being more true to the Bible. The Bible is, from its own writings, believes the Earth is flat, has four corners. There's and that. So they're actually being more truthful to the Bible.
It's from a long time ago.
The argument, believe me,
before
I know this.
Before we had telescopes.
See, that's what's great about this conspiracy. It's so obviously disproved so readily.
Yeah.
But in the face of all of this, they keep coming up with just bizarre ideas.
They have to, because in order to be a flat earther, you have to believe we faked the moon landing. You have to believe we faked all that stuff.
Well, that's part of the NASA, literally globalist movement.
Yes.
In showing that the Earth is a globe.
Yep.
And that the sun is only 5,000 miles away, and it's not near as big. And
it's like, why do we have to keep the whole idea that we have to have this conversation again? It's like, this is established.
You settled it in the 15th century.
All you got to do is go out on a boat in the middle of the ocean, and you can see the curvature of the Earth.
Ancient
which
Egyptians
should be done.
With shadows.
It should be done. And yet you constantly have to have this argument.
Greeks, actually.
The Greeks.
Question number two. What is your perfect two-week vacation? And money isn't an object, but physics is.
Oh, damn it. Because I love the Moon of Titan. It would be a very traditional Japanese, a bit of Japan, a very traditional hotel near the Sea of Japan through a bamboo grove. And I would work on some sumi painting. And some flowering.
Mm-hmm. Ikebana's great.
Yeah.
Very relaxing.
That
like
sounds
that.
Like
yeah, you guys
nice.
Are you'd be, making me work today.
You'd be big in Japan. Like,
yeah,
you'd be.
Literally. I would, seriously.
You'd be very big in Japan. Yeah.
All right, question number three. What's a movie or book, movie preferred, that changed your life and why?
The Omen.
Oh, really?
I saw it at 14 and it scared the shit out of a young Christian man. I was awake for weeks afterwards.
Really? You were worried about the Antichrist or possession or what? Just all of it?
The Antichrist, because I then read Revelation. Yeah. I'm like, fuck. But then the more I read Revelation, I was like, well, this is weird shit. And so I started reading, I started researching how Revelation came about, which started me on, honestly, the Omens. And I didn't even come up with this until you just asked me.
Yeah.
The Omen was probably the beginning seed of my very long journey to atheism.
That's so exciting.
Huh.
But man, that's why I don't go to many horror movies this day, because I get scared really easily. Some friend of mine, we're going to go see It. We're going to hold hands.
It's so good.
Guys, I seriously don't like scary movies.
No, I don't either.
I get scared so badly.
It's not very... I mean, there are a few jump scares.
And I know the stories.
But it is... horror.
It is a beautiful adaptation.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's not scary. It's horror.
Yeah. It's great.
Goosebumps.
That's really, a Christian, like, possession movies, Antichrist stuff, that stuff never scared me, really. Mm-hmm. The only one that ever got in my head a little was Rosemary's Baby, but that was more the forced pregnancy and, like, the, like, carrying something that you, like, that changed inside you was what freaked me out, not the, like, because I had a friend who was like, you gotta see The Exorcist, it's so scary. And my mom was like, yeah, it's like the scariest movie ever. And I was just sitting there like, well, I mean, none of this could ever happen. I completely can feel, like, for some reason, like, murderous, like, alien beings that turned into clowns or whatever the hell else, all the other Stephen King supernatural shit I'm fine with. But something about Christian demon possession, I'm like, no priest can fix this. Come on. Like,
I cannot suspend disbelief.
Yeah. Very lucky.
Question number four. What is the geekiest thing you have ever done or said?
I ran into Leonard Nimoy.
Your car?
No. He was doing a one-man show in Denver University, and I just happened to be backstage, and he comes by and went, sir, I just think you're wonderful, and I've read your books. I am not Spock.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, well, thank you very much. He had a beautiful voice.
Yeah.
And I said, do you believe in hope for humanity because of your time on Star Trek? And he was like, well, yes. And I just realized inside I'm peeing myself because I'm so excited. I'm going, be cool, be smart. But I was just going, I almost didn't hear his responses because inside my head I'm like, I'm talking about Spock.
It's just like white noise.
Spock was, I was a very emotional kid and I got beat up a lot you know, growing up, and I had so much rage. And so when Star Trek came and you saw the actual reason why Vulcans went with logic, trying to be Spock got me through junior high.
That's really cool.
See the guy who played Spock, I don't know, that's the first thing that came to mind.
That's fair.
I like that a lot. Yeah, that's good. A really good answer.
And our last question, what is your favorite hangover cure?
Really greasy bacon cheeseburger.
Ah, yeah.
With Gatorade.
Mm. Yeah, grease, salt, and carbs seems to be the running.
I eat the bun first a little bit to get some bland bread in there, but then I find the grease, the grease and stuff like that. Now I haven't been hungover since I was 28, but that's the last thing I remember.
Yeah.
I'm not prone to hangovers. I'm more prone to wake up drunk. It's just my metabolism so slow.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah,
that sucks.
It's pretty funny.
So,
thank you, my evil demon queen.
I haven't been hungover a lot, but yeah, I'm in the same boat. Greasy breakfast, greasy food.
That can usually force a drunk out of you, is the thing. Yeah. Like if you wake up,
dump some hot sauce on it and put coffee and water on the side.
Nice. Great. Yeah. No eggs, though.
Oh,
not
yeah.
Even the really? Smell of eggs.
Really?
Oh, that.
My cousin got drunk for the first time when she was like 15. She got super drunk, came home, snuck in, at like 3 a.m, knocking shit over or whatever. Like her parents knew. And they just let her pretend. They pretended like they didn't know. They just let her think she got away with it. And then woke her up at 6:30 a.m. and were like, get downstairs, breakfast with the family. And she's like, I'm tired. They're like, nope. And they like pull her out of bed, get her downstairs, make a big plate of runny eggs.
Uh-oh.
And they're like, oh, breakfast, your favorite. And she's just sitting there like trying to throw up, like, what's the matter, honey? You don't feel good? Like, what happened last night? Are you sick? You have the flu? And she's just like, trying to, and it just, then finally she's like, I got drunk. You don't say.
Really? Who knew? I'm sorry, before we finish the podcast, there's something that I feel needs to be said, and that is, Molly, if you ever form a band where you were the lead singer, it needs to be Evil Demon Queen and the Dick Missiles.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I like it. All my backup guys are going to be in skimpy clothes with, like, banana hammocks, so that with, like, painted,
A tinkerel bra.
Like a dance belt, but with the missile like painted on. Yeah. Tony, it's always a delight. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure, and I stumbled through it, but thank you guys.
The tired atheist in me honors the tired atheist in you. All right. We've been Geeks Without God. We're still at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival. I think this goes up while we're still having Minnesota Renaissance Festival.
Yeah, but Tony will be gone by then.
He'll
be on his way to Carolina.
If you want to make your way out to see the festival, do so, and we'll see you guys out here. Otherwise, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, rate us on iTunes, check us out on Stitcher, follow our Patreon and subscribe to us there, because that helps us out. We have new Patreon subscribers and some other things to announce. I don't have my phone on me on the festival days, so we'll do it next time we're recording in the luxurious basement. So thank you all very much, and have a good day.
Bye.
Bye.
Ciao.
Dicks.
We're geeks.
We're geeks. We're geeks without God.
We're geeks.
We're geeks. We're geeks without God.
We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks. Geeks without God.
Need more Geeks Without God? Go to our website, read our blog posts, find us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter at Geeks Without God. Social media!
We're geeks,
we're geeks,
we're geeks without God.
We're geeks,
we're geeks, we're geeks without God.
We're geeks,
geeks without God.
Firefly into Game of Thrones into Happy Days.